Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 180 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. And now, on to our read-along! Moving on to chapter 25, entitled House of Joy. And speaking of joy, we've decided to add someone who's maybe could bring some more joy to the podcast. Ginger, who's joining? joining us.
Who's joining the joy? It's Candida.
Candida.
Happy New Year, ladies.
That's right. Happy New Year. I haven't spoken to you since last year.
That's right. So here we are, 207, kicking off most exciting parts of Voyager. And I'm glad to be back.
Yay.
And we're glad to have you back. And you're going to be here next time too, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Because she wants to meet Ian. I want to meet Ian with everybody.
Besides Lord John, she wants to do Ian. I'm just kidding. Yes. She likes Ian.
Yes.
That's right. Okay, I was right. He may only be 14. But that wouldn't stop her. I'm just kidding.
Oh my gosh!
I'm kidding. He's fictional. Okay,
he's a baby. He's a baby. I fantasize about young Ian. Just for the
I
record.
Understand.
I'm sorry. Did I just walked away to blow my nose and I came back to you guys fantasizing about young Ian? How did that happen?
Because Candida is involved. That's how that happened.
Oh gosh,
she's here.
So that's how it happens. You walk away and things happen. Okay, so we have chapter 25, as Summer said, House of Joy, and we're joined by Candida. The chapter opens with a very good question by Claire. Who is Mr. Willoughby?
Now, whenever I hear the name Mr. Willoughby, I'm always assuming it's going to be Greg Wise.
Oh, Sensibility.
Sensibility.
He ended up marrying What's-Her-Face, right?
Yeah, he's married to Emma Thompson.
What a lucky woman. Good griefers. And he's aged well, too.
What a lucky dude, man.
Well, of course.
She's hot, too.
Yes, she is.
That was so patronizing, Ginger.
That goes without saying.
Yes, she is. What?
I'm agreeing with you. I'm not patronizing. Get over that. But I like him, too.
Well, I like to say that Diana describes Mr. Willoughby as a character who came about out of a necessity in the book. Mm-hmm. You guys probably know all of this because she needed an acupuncturist for Jamie. But he's a character that she had so much fun with that he turned into what she calls an onion.
Revealing mm-hmm. with the layers yeah.
throughout all of his, throughout the whole book. I know I'm not telling anybody that anybody doesn't know. Maybe there's one person out there who doesn't know it, but, I'm looking forward to, the part on the ship where he tells his story on the Artemis.
Yes. There's a lot of goodies coming up.
He does develop, like,
yep.
He develops into scary ways.
And while I won't try to argue that there is a very stereotypical caricature nature to the character, that is sometimes very painful to read. I agree the levels to the character and his actual backstory that develops as you get to know him better, and then how it culminates in how we the last time we see Mr. Willoughby near the end of the book is just it's a fascinating kind of journey that we're taking on.
You know, I have a question about terminology as I was rereading this chapter, in that he's referred to as the Chinese mm-hmm. several times, which I'm not used to hearing that as a
no. He's now, also referred right? to in that Chinaman, called
exactly.
him Chinaman.
Right. So I guess my question for Diana would be, if she was here with us, is she using that terminology because that's how they would have used it in the 60s.
I mean, the 1760s?
You know, because it's Claire.
Oh,
no, 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 no.
I see what you're saying.
Well, Claire is the one who
was
It wouldn't surprise me.
I think that it's not so much that how it would be talked about in the 60s, but she's a woman of the 40s. Mm-hmm. So even though she lived up through the 60s, her formative years is when she would have gained most of her knowledge of language. So a lot of those,
and you don't think she would have adapted if it was politically incorrect in the 60s.
Right. We didn't do politically correct until later. But
it was still very un-PC in the 70s. So forget the 60s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I was just wondering as I was reading it. It was so odd. And I'm like, okay, so this is not, you know, this is not current. This is still, you know, a woman from our past into his past. Mm-hmm. And it reads weird to me. And I kept wanting to correct it in my head. Anyway. Okay. So we've gotten through the first paragraph. Who is Mr. Willoughby?
Anne S. writes, the first line, who is Mr. Willoughby? Who indeed? I have no idea what Diana intended with this character. Has she ever addressed him in past interviews? TV show aside, there is no way this character will get or should get into the TV show. It is interesting that he has not been cast yet. If they use him, he will need a full rewrite. Mr. Willoughby is a little more than an obscene, racially offensive caricature. He even does acrobatics, can't hold his liquor, and is obsessed with feet. I just keep shaking my head every time he is on the page. He is barely treated as human and certainly not as a grown man in charge of his own life. Why is Jamie in charge of him? Why does Mr. Willoughby answer to Jamie? So many whys. I don't think the excuse of, well, it was 1760s or even 1960s when this was written flies. Oh, excuse me. Or even the 1990s when this was written flies. He could have been an interesting character without being written as Jamie's pet. And Claire's treatment of Mr. Willoughby is even more inexcusable given her background. She seems repulsed by him for no clear reason other than he is Chinese.
Okay, in this chapter, I don't get a sense that she's repulsed by him. And I also...
I mean, she doesn't want him touching her feet.
Well, nobody wants that.
Other than that.
I also have never associated... a Chinese man liking feet. I didn't know that was a stereotype. I don't know what that has to do with anything. That's a fetish, and that can be anybody's fetish. It doesn't matter what your race is.
Well, I did have the foot binding in China.
I think
correct.
Jamie has that because of his connection with the foot binding. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just referring to whoever wrote that email or sent that message to you is they're calling it as this, you know, he's this caricature, and I'm like, what does that have to do with whether he's Chinese or not? So if it had been an Irishman and he liked feet, that would be okay. I mean, what, I don't see why that's an issue.
No, because she's saying Mr. Willoughby is little more than an obscene, racially offensive caricature,
right?
So the fact that he likes he's Chinese and he likes feet is not because of the fetish side of it, but because they're roping it that in with the stereotypical nature of a Chinese person. Right. Oh, of course they're going to be into acrobatics. Of course they're going to be can't hold their liquor. Of course they're going to be into feet because that culture had it. And of course he had to be, you know, I think they're just saying it's one of a list.
Okay. I guess it's just a stereotype. I don't know. And so, okay.
Well, she's going to be a little disappointed.
Do you know what foot binding was for besides for the women?
Well, yes, but I guess that's maybe I can claim naivete that I didn't realize that's where that's coming from.
It's a sexual thing for the men.
Right, right.
It was.
Right.
Or maybe it is. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm sure
it wasn't the only thing. It was
okay,
part of it.
Oh, I understand.
Lord. I don't need to look at those.
Okay.
Anyway, but what I was trying to say is that she's going to be disappointed because Meryl has already stated numerous times on Twitter that there will be a Mr. Willoughby. And just because he hasn't been
cast
publicly doesn't mean he hasn't been cast.
Oh, I'm pretty sure he's probably
I'm
been
pretty
cast
sure they've
by now.
Cast everyone.
Yes.
They're just only releasing who they're releasing.
Well, she has said it, and Diana has said it, and Ron has said it in different times. So we know there's a Willoughby.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if he's a book Willoughby or you know,
oh gosh,
altered ability.
Or at least how close he is to, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's true. They could totally do a 180 and, you know, make him obviously a Chinese man.
Right.
And is the only thing he needs to have, they may not keep a Willoughby in Edinburgh. They may find him. He may be another person on. Well, probably have to find him in Edinburgh. They have to somehow loop him in to go on this later trip. But since you've already said it, his main purpose was to be there to get to bring the needles,
right?
So he can be like he could be some maybe comical, but he could be some. The comedy could come from his lack of really good English. You know what I'm saying? Like misunderstanding. You could do that without being as offensive as right. The book Willoughby is.
You know, I think perhaps another issue with this is that people, when they are reading it, are hearing a caricature in their heads. Whereas, and I think it's kind of this, what's lost in text messaging and emails that you're not getting from a conversation. So when you're reading the broken English, which let's be honest, he probably would have spoken broken English regardless.
Wasn't raised in an English speaking country.
For instance, when I'm in Germany, I speak broken German. Like my German is not amazing anymore. So, I mean, it's like, it's the same thing. He would have spoken broken English, period. Now, how they choose to accent that in the adaptation of it to screen, it is what's going to make or break it. And as long as they're not playing it like your stereotypical, like
the character, actually, there's a Japanese character in Breakfast with Tiffany's. You know, they don't want to do that.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. As long as they don't do post World War II or World War II era propaganda, like Asian, you know, that kind of character, mm-hmm. as long as they treat it with respect, I think it can be okay.
There haven't, it's so far in the show, there haven't, well, I can't recall any characters that would be kind of that bumbling. So I just don't see this character being that kind of a comic relief. I think there's going to be comedy, just like all the characters deliver comedy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm picturing. And Mr. Willoughby, you know, we don't really know too much about him in this chapter. So I know I don't want to jump ahead too much in this chapter. He's pretty bad. But I actually like his character. I feel sorry for his character. I admire his character in certain ways. And I don't, you know, I like the book character, but we'll see what they do with it.
I always like to imagine that because Mr. Willoughby, we're not even there yet. We're still in the first chapter, the first paragraph. But when when Jamie,
skip ahead.
I know, but when Jamie picks him up and talks about how he shouldn't drink, he very specifically says he should never drink brandy.
Yeah. Mm.
And who out there does not have a liquor that they should not drink? Like, I know some people who should never drink whiskey because they get angry. They get belligerent and angry.
Only with whiskey?
Only with whiskey. Whereas, you know, some people, you know, they have a specific type of alcohol that they literally they do not react well with. And he might have been able to drink beer or any other kind of alcohol and not been a raving lunatic. But the brandy is what made him go crazy.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be caricature. He could just be a really bad drunk. And that does not have to be English.
But he probably has to have broken English, though. Or at least not wonderful English.
I mean, it'll be broken. The whole point is that his character, one of the reasons he stays with Jamie is because Jamie is like his translator. He's the only person he's come into contact with who took the time to learn to speak his language to a degree.
Martina P. writes, while I love learning about customs, rituals, and healing methods of the Far East, I really don't I really don't enjoy the Mr. Willoughby character all that much. For me, he is a major distraction and causes this frantic chase through Edinburgh that I don't have any patience for, and it takes me away from Jamie and Claire's reconnection. So that's another angle as to why people may or may not have liked Willoughby in general, but because he interrupts the reunion, there may be a bias against whoever that was going to be. Or whatever that was going to be.
Nobody's mad at Ian.
Because you can't blame it on Ian. At least not the first part. Deborah C. writes, "This is the third or fourth time I've read Voyager, and each time I am offended by the treatment of Yi Tien Cho, Mr. Willoughby. The character is a caricature of full of horrible racial and ethnic stereotypes that I find hard to stomach. I'm all for diversity in the cast of characters, but would have been much happier had Diana given us a Chinese sailor with knowledge of Chinese herbs, acupuncture, etc. She could have shown the mistreatment and abuse suffered in those days by, quote, Orientals, unquote, without making a mockery of him. I would have much preferred Jamie speaking to and about Mr. Willoughby with respect and intervening when others aimed to mistreat Mr. Willoughby. Do we really need his obsession with feet? Couldn't he just as easily have been a dignified associate of Jamie's who betrays him because of jealousy or drink?"
Well, I'm
all of my he's asking a lot of the time.
I know, but all of my arguments and not arguments. That's, I mean, all of my discussion points that I feel would counter the things that she's stating happen so much later in the book that I can't talk really about bring it right now. But it will come back up, and I promise you I will address this statement.
I think
later.
Willoughby, now that he's broken out, is going to be, yeah, he's with us for the rest of the time. Eileen P. writes, "With Jamie, Claire is no longer fragmented. She is no longer a ghost of who she once was. She is ready to live life and take on the world. She feels reckless and indestructible. She has found Jamie and she is whole again." Lisa T. writes, "Chapter 25 begins with an adventure. This is not unlike the timing of the adventures in Outlander when Claire first meets Jamie, or Dragonfly and Amber when they are in France. This particular adventure centers around another Voyager, Mr. Willoughby." So in response to her question about who is Mr. Willoughby, Jamie answers that he is an associate. Anne S. writes, "Jamie loves to rename everyone. Fergus, Claire, Mr. Willoughby, and himself. What is that all about?" Well, I think there are reasons for each. Claire, he doesn't rename. He gives her a nickname. Fergus, because Claudel, I guess, would have been, if he adopted him, it would have been hard for others to say. I don't know.
He said it wasn't manly enough.
Oh, it wasn't manly enough. Mr. Willoughby, because his name, his proper Chinese name sounded like a curse or a coarse oath in Gaelic. So there's a name for each thing. I don't think he goes out of his way to change people. I think each thing happened at an opportune time for an opportune reason, or was a nickname. They get to the tavern. Inside the tavern, of course, the world's end. It's quite crowded. Jamie appears to be well known. He tells someone they'll not be staying, and he's only come for himself. Apparently, Jamie is very late in picking up this person. They go through a maze of rooms and into the bowels of the earth, it seems. And apparently, Jamie doesn't like it when Mr. Willoughby drinks in public houses. We get a wee history lesson on the original structure that was called the World's End, a wall, and Jamie is now looking for Mr. Willoughby, quote, "damn little bugger," behind the wall. Our next hint about Mr. Willoughby. Jamie shouts something that sounds like gibberish to Claire. It's not Gaelic. Quote, "I dug a finger dubiously into one ear, wondering whether the trip through the stones had deranged my hearing." wait, has Gaelic changed?
Has it been so long since I've heard it?
Oh my goodness. A ball of brilliant blue hits Jamie between the shoulder blades. It was a small figure. In Claire's words, quote, "the blue ball, meanwhile, had resolved itself into the figure of a very small Chinese who was giggling in unhinged delight, sallow round face shining with glee and brandy," unquote. And with that, opens up the can of worms that is Mr. Willoughby. Lord preserve us. He's doing flips to show off for Claire. Jamie grabs him and says they need to be going. He's okay when he's sober, he says, but not when he drinks brandy.
Okay, so right now, this scene is making me think of 16 Candles and their exchange student, Long Duk Dong.
Yes.
When he goes to the party and gets wasted, this scene to me feels like it could be played. They could be pulled directly from 16 Candles.
Jamie tells Claire that he got him on, or found him on, the docks. Now, as they leave the tavern, it's clear that Mr. Willoughby is not a favorite. One young woman screams when she sees him. She accuses him of doing, quote, the disgusting thing to me, unquote. Claire seems to have a knack for getting her gown ripped and displaying her bubbies. Someone remarks that at least his other whore's not yellow and pulls her dress down to expose, quote, quite a lot of pink, unquote. Lisa T. writes, so just like in Outlander, when BJR assaults Claire after she first comes with the stones, Claire is assaulted yet again. Claire is fascinated by what Mr. Willoughby did to the woman's feet. What follows is a hilarious conversation. Anne S. writes, okay, let the adventures begin. If it is Outlander and Claire is with Jamie, then someone must attempt to assault Claire. Sigh. Someone rips her dress at the World's End, which is still in existence today. The pub, not the dress. Have either of you been? I have. You didn't go, right, somewhere? Did you on your first trip there?
No.
To Edinburgh? Okay. I went in April of this year, and I don't think... I've been to Edinburgh before, and I may have been by it. I don't think that I went in it before, but I did go this year, and I posted some pictures of that. It's really cool. It's a cute little tavern. Eileen P. writes, we learned there is a wall in the basement of the pub called the World's End that was built after the disastrous Scottish loss of the Battle of Flodden Field in 1513. This wall is to indicate the limit of the civilized world of Scotland and separate the Scots from the English, sort of like Edinburgh's own Great Wall of China. Interesting, the Chinese man, Mr. Willoughby, who was thought of as a heathen, leaps off that, quote, great wall, unquote, and assaults a civilized Scot. I bet Mr. Willoughby is laughing and saying in Chinese as he leaps, you call that a wall? Jamie punches someone as they leave and rushes Claire out. They get to a place to catch their breath and Claire asks, what the F? In other words, Jamie says, well, it's the feet, you can. The women's feet. They have another close call, hide Willoughby's body, and hunch down to also hide. So when he's had too much to drink, he says, he starts talking about feet and all the horrible thing he wants to do with them. It seems he wants Claire, because he was mumbling, and Jamie tells Claire that it seems he wants Claire to walk on his face. Good Lord. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, Jamie, King of Men, also speaks Chinese. Of course he does.
Broken Chinese. So, yeah, that must be more where I'm just being naive. I'm not quite sure how walking on someone's face is sexual. I'm sorry.
I don't think...
just seems painful to me.
Okay, so...
I don't get that.
There may be a personal thing with feet for him. Like, not... You can't say, even back then, well, maybe back then you would be a little more... It would be still stereotypical, but it might be more... It might be closer to the... to a truth or a blanket statement that might have some kind of spark of truth to it. But these days, I don't think you could say that. So you have individual fetishes, right? Like some people are into...
Say it.
Feet. Some people are into corsets, whatever. People have different things that they like that turn them on. So that is something that seems that he has. But in that time, women, typically upper class women, I believe, in China would... many times would bind their feet. Now it was a sign of many things. It was a sign of your level in society. It was a sign of that, you know, you couldn't get away very fast. You couldn't leave it. So a lot of people say it was, you know, anti-woman as well, but women supported this thing. It was a mark of beauty. It was a culturally acceptable mark of beauty to have these small feet. And because of that, or along with that, it was also a sexual thing for men. Men could find it sexual. And so if you have something that is unique to your society, or pretty unique to your society, you grow up with it being, I don't want to say taboo, but it's known that it's there. And it's only very select women, right? It's high level or upper class women. So,
well, yeah, I understand all of that, but I'm you know, he's looking at Claire. Is he, you know, is he turned on because her feet are bigger than the right?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. So I think I think it's two prong. One, because his culture had this practice, he was not predisposed to it necessarily, but exposed to something that put a lot of focus on feet. Mm-hmm. And that may have been an influence or not, but he has this connection from his culture, his upbringing, as well as maybe a personal fetish. And so forget the feet, the binding for a second. Foot fet, I don't have it and I don't know much about it, but your people, from what I understand, a foot fetish or whatever it can be, there's not necessarily any boundaries to that thing. Like if someone loves...
I understand the concept of a foot fetish. I just don't understand the concept of walking up someone's face.
But that's what I'm saying. There's no rhyme or reason to the fetish. The foot, whether it's you're licking the foot, you're doing things to the foot, you're having the foot on your face. That's what I'm saying.
Anything goes, basically.
There's no... Exactly. Whatever is your fetish is your fetish. And so
I guess that was kind of a cleaner, perhaps funnier thing to put into the book, whereas some of the other things she could have said, which would have made readers go, ew.
Absolutely. That was just funny, though, because like I just think it's funny that that Jimmy's like, oh, by the way, he wants you to walk on his face. I'm like, wait, what? Excuse me? Where did my feet and his face come into this entire conversation? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. So apparently, as one of the commenters already mentioned, his real name, his Chinese name is Yi Tian Cho, and it means leans against heaven, which is a very beautiful name. And apparently, however, his name sounds like a coarse word in Gaelic when it's pronounced in Chinese. So he thought Willoughby would be better. And they won't be going back to the print shop, she learns. Jamie takes them to another place. They are greeted by a petite woman who is happy to see him. Her name is Madame Jeanne. She seems to be a bit put off by Claire's presence. And then Jamie introduces his wife to her, or Claire as his wife. Madame Jeanne gets a room and a bath ready for them. And Jamie asks also for a dress for Claire. So what did you guys think about their arrival at the brothel? And is this the House of Joy?
Well, why is a brothel the only place that Jamie can get a room and food? You can't get that at an inn or a hotel or they, you know, I guess, but that's his room.
Well, he got it for free.
That's his
he
room.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it for free.
Come on. Really?
And also, there's no Claire around. So who's there to, like, care?
For taking Claire there. I'm saying he couldn't get... He said, we came here because we had a bed and I knew it was a place I could get you... The other thing he said was, it's a place where I knew I could get your dress mended. But, you know, where they were going...
That's true, because there's a lot of women there 24/7. Okay, that's...
And she doesn't really wear one most of the next morning anyway.
Eileen P. writes, Jamie introduces Claire as his wife. Amazing how one little word can mean the world. They are not only together again, Jamie declares they are married. Everybody rejoice. When they get up to the room, where Jamie is entirely too comfortable, Claire asks him why he has a regular room at a brothel. Jamie isn't a customer of Madame Jeanne's, but she is a customer of his, we find out, and a good one. It's part of their arrangement. She says, the question is, what does a brothel owner have to do with a printer? Jamie says, nope. The question is, why are you back? I was like, Shazam, dude. That's a bit much. Dang. And then he clarifies, have you come back to be my wife or to tell me about my child? Quote, for that alone, I owe you my soul, for the knowledge that my life hasn't been in vain, that my child is safe. But it has been a time, Sassenach, since you and I were one. You'll have had your life then, and I have had mine here. Did you come back because you wanted to, or because you felt you must? Unquote. She says she came back because she found out he wasn't dead. She demands to know if he wants her to go. He says no, but they are neither the people they knew 20 years past. Quote, do you want me? Will you take me and risk the man I am for the sake of the man you knew? Unquote.
That's another quote that sticks out.
There's a whole can of worms there. But I want to go back to the question that he asks, or did you come back to be my wife again or only to bring me word of my daughter? Is he just being facetious there? He's like, yeah, I just went through all this trouble of going through the stones to show you these pictures. See you later. nice.
I think he meant, did you feel obligated? Did you come back? I see what you're saying. I don't think he's being facetious. I think he's like, did you come back because you wanted to be with me? Or did you come back because you felt obligated to tell me about my daughter? In which case, she may or may not leave again. But the fact that she was there, mm-hmm. you know, what brought you? Basically, is what he meant. It's like, what was the impetus for you coming? Was it because you wanted to see me, or was it because you felt obligated because you had to tell me something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess part of it is also the shock has finally worn off. They're back to being, they're almost back to being Jamie and Claire again. I mean, in the,
yes.
of course, the wonderful print shop scene is that there's a lot of shock value there. And then they're on the run.
Oh, yeah.
And now this is the first moment they've actually had to sit down and
breathe.
Well, I mean, they could have, he could have said these things when they were at the print shop, but he was just so overwhelmed and emotional at seeing her. He wasn't thinking about the why. He didn't care. He was, you know, he didn't even believe that she was there at first. So, yeah, this is the first time they're having to ask the question. And I do love this, as I was reading this particular passage, of course, I'm seeing Sam and Claire in my head, mm-hmm. which I don't normally do when I read these books. I still see the original characters that I dreamt up in my head. Mm-hmm. But this was the first time that I actually imagined those two actors in this scene. And this is going to be so powerful. I can't wait. And I love the last line that you said before I interrupted you about the, you know, are you willing to accept me as the man that I am now? Mm-hmm. Because we know, the audience, we all know for the most part the man that he is, and she doesn't.
Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah. And that's kind of a mirror, or not a mirror, a parallel to her being so worried that he'll accept her based on looks. And he's more worried right. that she'll accept him or not yeah. based on his experience.
Yeah. But he knows he's still hot, so he's not worried about it.
And she assumes he is too. I mean, come on. She never even thinks about, I mean, she might wonder, but she doesn't worry about it like she worries about herself. Quote, it's a lot too late to ask that. This is in response to him saying, did you come back or whatever? Why didn't you come back? She continues, because I've already risked everything I had. But whoever you are now, Jamie Fraser, yes. Yes, I do want you. Unquote.
I like that he doesn't ask about Frank.
Oh, Lord. Goodness. Yes.
You know?
Because that's, oh, baby Jeezy. Yeah.
That's not even in his head. Yeah. No. I mean, it's been 20 years. He's wondering what, you know, why now?
Yep.
And it's not what happened to Frank or anything like that. You know, he's not even, that's the F word for him.
Exactly. So. That's a good point that Frank hasn't even come up yet. I forgot. I didn't think about that.
Yep.
Lisa T. writes, this part of the chapter speaks for itself. It is the culmination of the books so far. Claire has found Jamie. He knows that his sending Claire back through the stones worked. But it is also a time when, like the wedding in Outlander, they renew their vows to one another, granted in a more casual way. Martina P. writes, I do feel for Claire as she goes from total bliss to a found Jamie and to be with him in two doubtless and insecurity. She does ask him several times if he wants her to go. I noticed that too. I find myself getting nervous for Claire when Jamie poses the question, why did you come back, Sassenach? Her presence was not enough for him. He needed to know the reason. However, Jamie does reassure us with those beautiful lines that only he can compose. Too many lovely Jamie quotes to mention in this chapter alone.
Mm-hmm.
Eileen P. writes, after hearing Jamie called a pimp master and being brought to his room in a brothel, yes, a brothel, Claire is having her doubts. Who is this man and what have you done with Jamie Fraser? Why have you come back? Is such a loaded question. Claire interprets it as a sign of Jamie not wanting her. Leading up to the reunion, Claire has been unsure that Jamie would still want her. With their reunion at the print shop, they shared their happiness, but with why have you come back, Claire immediately plunges into doubt about Jamie wanting her. However, it is really Jamie doubting Claire will want the man he is now. How much do you think a person can change after 20 years? Are they still essentially who they once were, regardless of experiences, or do those experiences change them significantly? Maybe it depends upon the nature of the experiences and how they deal with them.
Why is it you think Claire isn't worried about Jamie? Except, I mean, she's only thinking about the physical. He's thinking about his soul, or isn't, you know, his internal, the person he is. And she, I guess because she hasn't, hasn't done the things that he's done, or maybe she has done some things that he won't like, but, well, you know, why is she not worried about anything beyond the physical?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mentioned something similar to that earlier. It's like, it's a disproportionate, although somewhat parallel concern. Joby writes, "The ensuing discussion about ownership of the brothel and what Jamie has done to warrant a room so easily is the basis of the wider issue of how the new Jamie interacts with the new Claire. It's establishing an emotional intimacy before a physical reconnection is consummated. Without the initial joys and mediation through Bree, this is the conversation where they can be honest, where Jamie is able to give voice to his thoughts and feelings and be vulnerable enough to ask what he wants. Claire's default is in actions and solutions. And here, in self-protection, gets defensive. She can't say she came back because she still loves him. To her, it's obvious the reason she's back. So she offers to leave in a scene reminiscent of their return to Castle Leoch in Outlander. When Jamie asks if she will accept him now for the sake of what was, it's as much for him as for her. We are starting to see some of the life Jamie has had since we left him, leaving Hellwater. They realize just how little they know each other, just how much of each other's lives they've missed. A maid brings in their supper, and she tells him how she made her way from Inverness, and he tells her how he found Mr. Willoughby drunk on the docks. They are awkward with each other again, but they get ready for bed. As he undresses her, he's surprised by the zipper. Finally, he sees her again, nude for the first time in 20 years. He is still in love with her in every way. She asks, insecure, about the lines on her stomach. He then asks about the thigh. The thigh on his scar.
What?
She...
I'm really curious how they do this scene considering where the scar is.
Oh yeah.
You know, how is I don't need to be seeing anything, so I'm curious what they do. Maybe they'll just put a little scar on his knee.
Oh, well, or you can do his thigh without getting near his junk.
Yeah, but doesn't the scar go all the way up there? It goes all the way.
I think it goes to the right of the Balzac.
Right. So, you know.
He then asks about the scar on his thigh. What a beautiful way to refer to her stretch marks. Quote, "If you bear the scars of your own battles, Sassenach, they didn't trouble me either." Unquote. Now she admires him. They both admit they're scared. They get all romantical and
romantical.
Boom. Yep. Her nose meets his forehead. So there's a little bit of we still have comedy going here. But then it finally happens. And after he is given his release, he lowers himself and rests his head against hers.
His release.
Stop it.
Oh my God. I think you should read this whole set scene. I think the audience wants to hear you read it.
I am not going to read that.
Your NPR voice.
And get that woman in trouble at work.
Yes, I want to hear you. Yep. I want to hear you do the voices. I want to hear you.
The voices? I don't do the accents.
I want to hear you do.
I mean, on accident sometimes, but not on purpose.
I want to hear you read it all breathy.
All breathy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why would I read it breathy?
Because it'd be funny.
Because like your sex phone voice.
Exactly. Sex phone there voice. You go.
Operator?
I don't have... Are you taking the thigh on the scar? I don't have a sex phone or a phone sex voice. Stop it. And I will save you guys, or prevent. I won't prevent you. You can do anything you want. I will, I guess, save your ears. So I will not be reading those. Davina does a very good job. Eileen P. writes, "I love that Jamie and Claire were hesitant with each other when they finally made love. They took the time to explore each other's bodies and how those bodies have changed. Wanting to know every detail and reliving every scar." I'll tell you why I'm laughing in a second. "Trying to account for the 20 years apart. While they were hesitant, they also felt the urgency of just wanting to finally be with the other in the flesh rather than imagining a ghost. So the reason I got a little like giggly was that here I said, I'm not going to read it. Like I have full control over what I choose not to quote or read in my notes. But since I take others' words and try to thread them in the correct place throughout the notes for the discussion, if someone else quotes something, I read it. So I could still be embarrassed by having to read something else. Since everyone's talking about sex this, sex that, sex this. I'm like, good law, people. Oh, gosh. I probably just gave away a big hint of how to embarrass me, but please don't do that. Martina P. writes.
I think the funniest part for me, or I don't know if funniest is the right word, reading this chapter was I haven't read through her books in a while. So it was almost like reading the sex scene was kind of out of context a little bit. You know what I mean? Because I haven't read a book from the beginning. So I'm just kind of coming at this cold. So I was reading it just going, good Lord, the don't stop, for God's sake, don't stop. His body heard me and answered in the same language. So I'm reading this just thinking, good Lord.
So are you saying that you're just getting back on the sex train too?
Just kind of funny because I mean
for the characters.
I haven't read these in so long. It's almost like I forgot.
So it's not a bicycle then.
No, it's not. It was kind of fun because I mean obviously I've read the books a couple of times, so I know what's gonna happen, but it's reading these little details that's just refreshing, making it all refreshing.
Martina P. writes, the spiritual and physical connection between Jamie and Claire is so powerful and I can't get enough of it. Their initial awkwardness and shyness is so realistically described and just charming. Their sexual encounter is a parallel to their wedding night. Three times, if I counted correctly, just like their first night together. Quite breathtaking. Why is that funny?
Because she's been counting.
Oh, okay.
Like the wedding night, she knew it was three times then, and I'm pretty sure it was three times this time. It was just funny.
Okay, this is the last time we're gonna recreate the wedding, though, right? Their honeymoon. It's just this time, and then the other time with oh my God, I was even part of the chapter, and I've already forgotten William's mother's name.
I can't. What?
Oh, Geneva.
Geneva. Thank you.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, Lord. So, I don't even know.
No more recreating wedding night.
Lisa T writes, here are those vows. And this is what Lisa is referring to when she said, this is a, along with everybody else, this is a parallel to their wedding night. Yeah. Quote, no, but I must know. Do you want me? He whispered. Quote, Sassenach, will you take me and risk the man that I am for the sake of the man you knew? I felt a great wave of relief mingled with fear. It ran from his hand on my shoulder to the tips of my toes, weakening my joints. It's a lot too late to ask that, because I've already risked everything I had. But whoever you are now, Jamie Fraser, yes. Yes, I do want you. Unquote. They have reaffirmed their commitment and love for one another. They are beginning their new life together. Quote, now we had come to the place where we could begin to know each other again and discover whether we were, in fact, the same two people who had existed as one flesh and whether we might be one again. Unquote. They waken later, and she asks him if he owns the brothel. He's insulted. But he's no pimp, he says. He is a printer, but he is also a traitor still. He's been arrested a number of times in the past few years alone. She says he won't lose her again. Quote, not even if I find you've committed bigamy and public drunkenness, unquote. Yeah. Now I thought it was interesting, but I won't hammer it too much because he doesn't go on about it, but I will point it out. He flinches at her saying, not even if I find out you've committed bigamy and public drunkenness. Let's just say he's not worried about he's not reacting to public drunkenness.
Well, she never said she wasn't a hypocrite, or a liar. Yeah. But,
so he flinches at that. We might ask why. So she asks what it was. He says that printing isn't very profitable. He's also a smuggler. So printing not being profitable and him being a smuggler, it doesn't really answer the question why he flinched at that line. But I'll let that go. Another iconic line, when she asks what he thought the first time they laid together. And he responds, quote, "It has always been forever for me, Sassenach," unquote. Later that night, she asks him how he got the long scar on his thigh. And all he says is it was at Culloden. Later, he asks her to draw Brianna for him. Describe whose parts she has so he can imagine her. And this is probably the most touching part of this chapter, I think. The most touching part of the first of 24, I think, is the photos. And the most touching part of this chapter is when she paints Bri, when she draws Bri. The chapter ends with, quote, "You gave me a child. We are together for always. Mm-hmm. She is safe and we will live forever now, you and I. He kissed me very lightly and laid his head upon the pillow next to me. Brianna," he whispered, in that odd Highland way that made her name his own. He sighed deeply and in an instant was asleep. In another, I fell asleep myself. My last sight, his wide, sweet mouth, relaxed in sleep, half smiling, unquote. Eileen P. writes, "It is so sweet for Jamie to ask Claire to draw Brianna, indicating how she looked like Claire and how she looked like Jamie. While Jamie is relieved and joyous that he and Claire have created Brianna and that she is safe, it is also a bittersweet moment because Jamie will never meet her. This reminds me of Jamie having to leave Willie. It's heartbreaking that Jamie doesn't get to be with his children." Anne S. writes, "I feel like these next few chapters really illustrate Diana's method of writing. She likes to write scenes out of order, work on them, and then add the linking narrative later. So you have these really wonderful scenes between Jamie and Claire that are full of longing, uncertainty, and fear, and then finally surrender. When Claire is quizzing him about his business with the brothel, Jamie cuts right to the heart of it all. Why is Claire here, and does she still want him despite the last 20 years? When she reverses the question, he answers without hesitation that he would not care, and we know that to be true. Claire says she doesn't either, but most of what she does after this belies that sentiment. Then we get the frenetic, even farcical action scenes that don't always work. TV show aside, when Jamie says, 'Christ not want ya, I burned for you for 20 years, Sassenach, but I am no the man you knew 20 years past, am I?' I can so hear Sam saying that. It has always amazed me how much relationships rely on the early stories of when a couple first meet and are together. It is as if couples need to return to the well of the early connections in a ritualistic way, relive them by telling each other their story. There is a well-known couples therapist who claims that he can tell if a couple would stay together by how they tell their origin story. I'm pretty sure Jamie and Claire passed his test. They return to their wedding night. Even though shy, clumsy, and unsure, they are able to use that as a bridge to reconnect now all these years later. Simply stunning. I love how when they can't fall asleep, too aware of each other, they use Brianna as a new bridge between them."
You know, there was something you said, I don't know what it was, just in those last few comments that made me answer my question that I asked earlier about Jamie being concerned about the man that he is and Claire being concerned about what she looks like. And the answer just kind of became obvious just now. And that is that she's joining his life and his time period, which means his mm-hmm. life and who he, what he's done and what he's become. And she's only presenting herself physically. She's not bringing anything with her. I mean, she's let it go. She's cut herself off to become part of his life. So I guess that's why it would yes. be, you know, am I going to fit in with him? Not just his life, but, you know, she's concerned about him still being attracted to her. But
and I think she was holding back because you're right. She had already cut her emotion off just in order to survive mm-hmm. the last 20 years. Yeah. And of course I don't think she's unwilling to give herself back to him emotionally, but she's more stuck on the physical because that's what is the first thing you see. Right. And unless she knows that he will accept her for the way she is now, which quite frankly is how she looks, mm-hmm. how she is, then she's not going to open her heart until she knows she's accepted.
Right. And she's not bringing, yeah, she doesn't have the baggage that he has. I mean, she doesn't know exactly what his baggage is, but she knows it's not going to be pretty. But yeah, I mean, she's led a, you know, compared to him, a sheltered life. So
Deborah C. writes, Diana does her usual marvelous description of their first lovemaking since Claire's return. In parentheses, she writes, the show had better keep this one in. Kate and Sam will be able to do it justice. Our Claire and Jamie have aged well, and from the description in the book, they are hotter than ever. Joe B. writes, the chapter ends with a discussion about Bree, and here with her emotional connection to Jamie, Jamie's rekindled, Claire can fully release her fears and losses and the choice to come back. Jamie gives an unspoken but needed form of absolution, although Bree's blessing was arguably more important, as the person Claire cares most about again accepts her fully, body and soul. Martina P. writes, another very tender and beautiful moment is when Jamie and Claire so closely connect through Brianna and Claire's descriptions of similarities between them. So in love with the scenes when they talk about their daughter and Jamie's eagerness to learn everything about her.
I think that's always been one of the saddest themes. You mentioned that earlier about Jamie never being able to hold either, you know, any of his children as babies.
So that was 25. We got through it with, maybe it wasn't a very damp chapter, either of them.
Damp? Is that what you called it?
Yes. I think one of the reasons that I'm affected so much by this book is not just because of the story and the characters that we fall in love with, but the time at which, and I couldn't imagine reading it even at an even younger age. Like Summer was 2 years younger than me and minus at least a year. Summer is 2 years younger than me, and she found the book before me. So she was not only younger when she found it, but or younger than me whenever she would have read it. She was younger in time as far as what, 2 years or at least something like that before she mentioned it to me or something like that. And so Summer was like, what, Summer, were you like 19, 18?
I was 19.
You were in New York.
I was 19.
19? Okay, so I was 21, between 20 and 22, around there. And this is, no, I've just aged myself, so it's been quite a while. But that is, for me at least, that's pretty formative for anyone. So, like, I can't even imagine reading this, like, at 15 or 16.
That would be my niece. My niece started reading them around that time. Yeah, she's totally hooked on the books and the show.
I'm hooked on them, and I read them in my early 20s, and I was still... I won't go there. But yeah, very easily influenced by things or influenceable. And having this, even at that age, was, my goodness, I couldn't imagine starting younger and being even more. So by me, even almost 20 years later now, when I read it just to take notes, holy crap, it just like, I'm like a weeping mess.
When I, as you know, I went to the Random House open house a couple weeks ago in New York, and had a lovely, lovely week there with Mandy and Stephanie and Stephanie's wonderful mother, Holly, who recently joined Twitter. So everybody should follow her. But anyway, we were sitting down one evening and Holly, who is a fan, asked us the question, I can't even remember what her exact question was, but she wanted to know how Outlander had changed our lives, because at the open house, a lot of people if you watched the video, a lot of people relate to Diana, how much it meant to them and how much it changed their lives. And she didn't quite get it. She said, it's just, you know, she wasn't trying to put it down, but basically she was saying it's a series of books. How does it really how is it having such a large impact on people's lives? And, you know, Mandy answered and Stephanie answered, and then it was my turn. And I told her that the biggest effect that it has had on me, I mean, it's beyond entertainment for me, but I can't say that it was the books so much as Diana's effect, I said, but I wanted to be a writer ever since I was young, but I was always too afraid to put myself out there as a writer or to even say out loud that I wanted to be a writer, because that just sounds like such a pipe dream. And I was too embarrassed to say that I wanted to be a writer, because if you say, sometimes you say it to people and they just kind of look at you like, oh yeah, you're one of those people. But you know, reading these books inspired me, and but that wasn't enough. It was really Diana's encouragement and the way she is with people who do want to be writers. And you know, so that's the largest impact that it's had on me, because it made me come out and talk about writing and actually start writing and let people read what I've written. I mean, how much of a larger impact on someone's life can you have than that? So anyway, there you go.
Yeah, it hasn't affected me at all.
I get that. Yeah, you only spend a couple hours a week on this.
Shh, don't tell anybody that. Oh, if only it were a few hours, I'd be so much happier.
That's true. I don't know how you guys do it. I really don't.
I don't know how this girl does it either. Summer reads. Summer shows up. She has to talk.
I am in awe. That you guys
don't be like that.
I've been doing it for so long. I'm so impressed.
It's called masochism.
I wish I had your
and
stamina.
It's masochism. Oh, my stamina. Well. It's a lot of things, but we're glad. But see, that's another thing is one of the questions, even though, okay, I mean, it's not as huge of an answer as it changed my life for XYZ, but the biggest thing that I can see, besides obviously having this show, is that just the people we've met.
That's a big common answer, right?
And that's actually where, I mean, yes, it, like for yourself and others, it can influence your idea or your confidence and have you go into a new career or start a new practice. And that's, you know, that's valid and very beautiful. But I think the most common one that I see is the people you've met and how those people whom you met through this story or through a connection or a love for books or a story, then completely unrelated to the story, how they've affected your life just by being in your life. And
oh, exactly.
That's
their influence.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's crazy. I mean, I can't even count. I mean, I probably could count, but I won't do that tonight to any of us. But there, you, Mandy, I mean, Stephanie, it's almost endless, and it's kind of embarrassing. I'm not embarrassed to say that I met you guys, you know, in this manner or because of this. That I'm proud of that. I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, how else could I? I mean, I've met people. I haven't traveled all over the world. I've traveled a little bit around the country, and of course, just to Scotland. I'm not complaining, but
there's the friendships that are fantastic, but I'm also amazed at generosity.
I think that has been I agree with you. That to me is the most, I don't want to say shocking, because I'm not trying to say that I'm shocked that people would be nice, but especially in this day and age where everyone's so protective, but we don't know a lot about our neighbors. We want to keep to ourselves because of safety and this and that. Oh my goodness. The people that I've met, first of all, they're awesome people. But second of all, and I have very, very generous family members. So this is not speaking ill of family in any way. It's not, it's not about that. But as far as friends and people that you've never actually met face to face, and then you do meet, and then they ask you to stay with, I mean, just for an example, they ask you to stay with them or allow, or, you know, invite, whatever. You really hit the nail on the head. The most amazing people, and so generous beyond, it still humbles me, and it still surprises me, even though I know I shouldn't be surprised. You know what I mean?
I am continually shocked. I mean, and obviously I'm one of my closest friends from this whole social networking through Outlander has been Mandy, and she blows me away with her generosity all the time. And it's not just, she's not just generous with me. I mean, she has a huge generous heart, and
oh my gosh, embarrassingly generous to a fault.
Yeah.
But cut it out, Mandy.
Quit that.
No, don't cut it out. But thank you. But we appreciate it more than you know. And we hope you know how appreciated you are. That's the biggest point.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. I think we should wrap. So,
and that was chapter 25. Join us next time when we will be discussing, at the very least, chapter 26, entitled Whore's Brunch.
So thank you. I almost said Mandy, but you're not Mandy. Although we love you, Mandy.
Oh.
Thank you. Yeah.
Now I'm being replaced. Okay.
What? Stop it. Thank you, Candida, for joining us.
Thank you.
Not quite the last minute, but kind of last minute. I mean, because it was planned, but then Ginger forgot, and then Summer reminded me.
Nice to be forgotten. Oh,
apparently, oh, sussed up. Yeah. Well, you came back 5 times, so that's good. So at least you're committed.
I was determined to finish this recording.
I bet. I know. So thank you, Candida, for being with us. It was great to have you. And we're going to have you. Are we having you back for 26?
Yes, I would love to. I have to be here for Ian. Okay. I have to.
So Candida will most likely, unless Ginger forgets, be here for 26 and 27. So as we wrap, of course, join our Facebook group, The Outlander Pod, to be there when we start talking about things that we've mentioned there. I don't want to mention here yet. Special little poll. If you check it out, you'll know what I'm talking about. And just some little things. We had in the past few weeks, or I guess 2 weeks, we've gone live. Just a wee video. We're working on getting that a little tighter. Just say a little bit of hi and interact a little bit before we go and do our own recording. And yeah, we'd love to have you join us there to continue the conversation, just to pop in and out. And we would love that personal interaction with you guys. And that link, it's a short link for make it easy to join, is outlanderpod.com/group. And that'll take you straight to our Facebook group. So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.